Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio at the East County Magazine Wellness Center in El Cajon, where we invite all of you to stop by our grand opening on Tuesday from 5:30 to 7 o'clock and see our new studio. Today we've got a great show lined up. Now, if you're looking for a good-paying job with great benefits, be sure to stay tuned. On our Jobs Talk segment, Leon Thompson will be talking with a CHP recruiter on what it takes to be hired as a dispatcher or a CHP officer, and they are now hiring. On our Capitol Report, we'll have the latest news from Washington, D.C. on a White House statement and legislation passed by the House to address the persecution of Christians and other minorities in Iraq. We've got a warning for rural residents about some livestock killings that may be linked to recent mountain lion sightings. And we have news on the latest sexual predator release proposed in East County. In our Green Scene Report, we'll tell you about some more desirable new residents just released in East County, endangered western pond turtles that are making a comeback in California. And we'll introduce you to our new host of Vines and Wines, Don Rutkoff, who will take you on a visit to the Ramona Ranch Winery, one stop along a backcountry wine tasting tour hosted by the East County Vintners Association. Plus, we'll play one of our old favorites, our interview with the proprietor of a zebra farm right here in East County. We'll have all this news and more, so stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Show, bringing you the voices of East County. Welcome to East County Magazine Show's Jobs Talk, bringing you news about great jobs, job training opportunities, and growing our regional economy.
This is Leon Thompson on East County Magazine on KNSJ, and I'm here with Matt Butler and Emily Mullen.
With the California Highway Patrol,
we understand that there is a call out for a couple of positions. Could you tell us what those are?
That's correct. I'm Officer Matt Butler, and I'm a recruiter for Border Division. And in California, the California Highway Patrol is broken up into eight divisions. And Border Division is the southernmost division, and it covers all of San Diego County, all of Imperial County, all of Orange County, and Eastern Riverside County and Southwest Riverside County. And right now, it's a great time to apply for the Highway Patrol for a couple of reasons. We're looking for public safety dispatchers within Border Division, and that encompasses four communication centers right here in San Diego, out in El Centro, in Indio, and out in Orange County in Irvine. And we're also looking for the position of California Highway Patrol officer.
Now, these are good-paying jobs with great benefits. Dispatchers can earn anywhere from $3,400 to $4,700 a month, plus medical, dental, and vision care coverage for their whole family, and great retirement benefits, too.
Emily, I understand that you are a dispatcher. So what is it like to be a dispatcher?
I'm a public safety dispatcher with the California Highway Patrol. I've been on the job for over 6 years. What that entails is we answer 911 calls from cellular phones, and we dispatch Highway Patrol officers to those calls that we get. We also receive calls out of our jurisdiction for service that we transfer to allied agencies. We communicate a lot with the San Diego Police and Sheriff's Department, and also the fire departments in the region.
How do you know who is closest to the incident?
Well, that's a good question. We have GPS monitors on the patrol cars, but we don't use those primarily for dispatching. That's mostly just for safety. What we do is our officers have assigned beats that they work, and so whoever is assigned a beat that's closest to the call for service is the one who's sent.
And Officer Mullins, why is this particular job opening? It seems to have a wide range of advertising for you. Is there an urgency in getting these positions filled, or is this different than any other recruitment campaign?
As a recruiter down here in Border Division, it's It's my responsibility to recruit for all positions in the department, non-uniformed and uniformed positions. Right now, there is a bit of urgency to get people hired to do this job. They are, at times, short on their shift, and it's a position that always requires somebody to be there for the public and to be there for their officers, to dispatch the calls to them on the beat, and, you know, to take calls from the public. So, yeah, it's definitely important that we fill these positions as soon as we can.
Are there special skills required to be working in the border region, as you call it, along California's southern border?
Well, bilingual Spanish speaking is a definite plus, but it's not a requirement. Also, knowledge of the geographical area. We handle all of San Diego County, and we also dispatch for the southern portion of Riverside County, which is the Temecula, Marietta area. So the more familiar you are with our county's geography, the easier it is definitely to adapt. It's especially important because East County has a lot of unincorporated areas, which are CHP jurisdiction.
Sure.
And it's difficult for a lot of dispatchers who aren't familiar with that part of the county. It's such a large geographical area. And
right.
There's so many landmarks that people who are residents refer to that if you don't know the area, you're not familiar with.
That's right.
And so someone's calling in a motorcyclist who goes down at Sunshine Summit, and
right,
if you're not
exactly
familiar with that area, it can be very difficult to get help there quickly.
Right. So Hopatool Valley.
We have a couple dispatchers who live in Ramona, and then one who originally was from Boulevard.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever we get a call out there, we turn to them and ask them, do you know this area? Where is this? It's really helpful to have someone who grew up there and knows all the different landmarks and schools. And so it is good. It's a huge chunk of where we patrol.
Oh, that's pretty enlightening.
A lot of the skills you can learn on the job, the skills that are most important are important for a dispatcher in any area. Calm under pressure, ability to multitask, familiarity with a computer and telephone systems, those will all come in very helpful.
Right. Well, you seem very calm. What are some of the kinds of calls that you get that require such steely calmness?
Well, on the 911 end, we answer a lot of 911 calls, well over 1,000 a day most days. And we get calls from cellular phones that are not necessarily related to highway incidents, so medical aids. A lot of times when you get a call involving a child, it's difficult to keep yourself composed. On the radio end, we get calls from our field units that they've been in accidents, or sometimes there's shootings that are involved. And it's important, as a dispatcher, you're the lifeline to both the public and the officer. It's important that you're able to maintain a calm demeanor and get the help that's needed as soon as possible.
Officer Butler, is there something unique about serving the border region between San Diego and El Centro, and I assume all the way even to Yuma?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, we have our highway patrol office is closest to the Arizona border. Down here is going to be Winter Haven, and a little bit north of that's going to be our Blythe office in Blythe, California. But what's unique about being in Border Division, the geography about it, is an officer, or even a dispatcher for that matter, it's very diverse. I can be working in an office and have the ability to be up in the mountains, up in the pine trees, in the snow in the winter, or I can be down in the desert, or I can be in parts where we have all this beautiful coastline to work the Pacific Coast Highway, which I've done before. It's a ton of fun. It's just a blessing to be there, really.
It is nice to be just in San Diego, and, this is a beautiful part of the country.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything else you'd like to say about these positions?
Yes. Well, I'm going to talk about real quick some of the minimum requirements for officer position.
Yes, please.
Okay. It's 20 to 35 years old, and you got to have a high school diploma or equivalent. Okay. No felony convictions. You got to be a U.S. citizen by the time you put your badge on.
Okay.
Also, we're going to be taking applications for the officer position. Okay. This is going to be November 3rd through the 6th, 2014, online at chpcareers.com. And you can also find out the information about being a public safety dispatcher at that same website, chpcareers.com.
Did you say there was a test that could be taken online?
No, it's an application.
Oh, an application.
An application that's submitted online.
All right.
And, for the dispatcher positions, if they go online to that website, I'll say it again, chpcareers.com, there's a bulletin that's posted. It's, and you go under CHP exam bulletins, you click on that link, and the bulletin's going to come up for our dispatch positions in the Indio, El Centro, Orange County, and Border Division, or San Diego County Communication Centers. And that's the first step that somebody needs to go to apply for being a dispatcher. And one of the primary minimum requirements for a dispatcher is to have a typing certificate of 40 words per minute or more.
Well, that leaves me out.
But that's really one of the minimum requirements. But once you get onto that exam bulletin, you see it online, it spells it all out there in great detail for the reader.
And what are some of the other requirements for being a dispatcher? That
requirements that the department, either a year of dispatching or telephone switchboard experience, which I know a lot of people don't have anymore, so you can substitute that with 2 years of public telephone contacts if you worked at a call center, a customer service, or just 3 years of customer service work in general. You can also substitute a college credit. I think it's 60 semester or 90 quarter units of college-level coursework. Or if you've taken the POST, which is Peace Officer Standard and Training Basic Dispatch course, that would qualify as well. If you go online, the deadline to apply is August 14th. You do have to mail in an application for the public safety dispatch position, and the application is, it's available online, but you have to print it and mail it.
You have to download it.
You can't complete it and submit it online.
Right.
And there is then a written test, and that's post-certified, so Peace Officer Standards and Training written exam. That'll be administered, I believe, September 13th of mm-hmm. this year. And then after that, you go through a background process, an interview, and then it takes, it can take several months to complete that. But like Officer Butler mentioned earlier, there is a great need. We are a primary answering point for 911 calls in the county. So when we are short on dispatchers, there's longer waits for 911 calls. And, it's just a position where we can't really work without a minimum number of people. So I know that they're looking to hire between 10 and 12 people within the next year, which is significant. The sooner that you get your application in, the better, because they tend to go in hiring cycles. So mm-hmm. after August 14th, there probably won't be an open period for at least another year.
Now, you mentioned some courses that can be taken in lieu of experience. Are those available at the community colleges?
Yes, they're offered, I believe, through Cuyamaca College, I think, has a basic mm-hmm. public safety dispatch course. And Grossmont might as well. I'm not entirely sure, but they are offered mm-hmm. through the community college system.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a requirement, but it is beneficial if you have taken it.
And Officer Butler, are some of the courses for officer training available at the community colleges?
Some of the local community colleges offer a post-certified academy. For the California Highway Patrol, we don't accept any laterals, so if you already have a post certificate, you're going to have to go to our academy anyway, and that's located up in West Sacramento, and it's 27 weeks long.
And what is that 27 weeks like?
For me, it was a lot of fun. It's challenging. I guess to really sum it up, I would say it's like boot camp and community college all wrapped up into one.
Oh, that sounds like fun.
But there's
so there's physical training as well, right?
There's physical training, but the way I kind of saw it when I was a cadet was I'm getting paid to exercise. I'm getting paid to learn performance driving. I'm getting paid to shoot guns. I'm getting paid to do a bunch of really neat things that I probably wouldn't have the opportunity to do if I never applied.
Thank you so much for coming in, and I appreciate you bringing this these positions to our attention out here in East County, and especially when you talk about how knowing the area is an advantage, actually, somewhat, and can help out. Appreciate you being with us at East County Magazine. Anything else you'd like to say?
Yeah, one more thing, if you don't mind.
Uh-huh.
For the public safety dispatcher position, this is a really unique opportunity to learn about the position even more is by attending one of our recruitment seminars for dispatching. And that's going to be on August 6, 2014 at 6 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. at our Border Communications Dispatch Center. And if they want more information about that, they can go to chpcareers.com, or they can send me an email at 601_recruitment@chp.ca.gov.
And that's Wednesday, right?
Right. And the dispatch supervisors are going to be there. They're going to be the ones doing the presentation, okay, talking about the pay and the benefits and the good parts of the job and some of the bad parts about the job, and just give people an idea of what they're getting into.
And where is this location?
It's going to be at our Board of Communications Center, and that address is 7183 Opportunity Road, San Diego 92111.
And that's in Claremont?
Yes.
Okay. Oh, one more thing. Remember I asked you about if there's anything unique about driving in East County that maybe you could advise us on or recommend?
Yes, we get calls all the time, and East County residents are typically very good about knowing where they are. Even if they don't have an exact mile marker, they can at least give you a landmark. But a lot of tourists that come out east, especially in the winter, they're not familiar with where they are. They'll go off-road in the snow without proper chains or tires. So especially driving out in East County where it's a little more remote, sometimes if you get stuck at night, a tow can't come get you until the daylight. So it's very important to know where you are and to be aware of the capabilities of your vehicle. Like I said, most residents don't have issues with it. It's tourists in the area.
And just to add to that is just in my experience of being a highway patrol officer investigating collisions and coming up and assist at different collisions and seeing stranded motorcycles, exactly what she said, know the capabilities of your vehicle. Make sure you have the right equipment in your vehicle if you're going to be going any type of inclement weather. But beyond that, you know, if I could really put one thing out there, it's to wear your seatbelts. It's extremely important. It increases your survivability if you're involved in a motor vehicle collision, you know, a lot. It really does. Maintain a high visual horizon. Look far ahead of where you're driving. Never allow your eyes to catch up to where you're at on the road. And of course, you know, maintain a safe following distance all the time. Very important.
Well, thank you all again so much for coming in.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital. This is Miriam Raftery with today's Capitol Report. It's rare for Congress to agree on anything given the partisan divide in Washington, but House Resolution 683, authored by San Diego Congressman Juan Vargas, has passed the House of Representatives unanimously. The measure expresses the urgent need to protect religious minorities in Iraq from persecution at the hands of the terrorist group ISIL, or Islamic State in Iraq and Levant. The measure by Vargas, a Democrat, was co-authored by three other San Diego representatives, Republican Duncan Hunter, as well as Democrats Susan Davis and Scott Peters. Vargas said he's pleased that the House is shedding light on this important topic and, quote, supporting our nation's need to be vocal in the face of the horrific crimes taking place against Iraqi civilians. He voiced support for religious minorities fleeing territories held by ISIL in Iraq, adding that religious freedom is the cornerstone of any free society, and we must do everything in our power to provide immediate protection and humanitarian assistance to individuals facing horrific crimes because of their religious beliefs. Mark Arabo, a national spokesman for Iraqi Christians and president of the Neighborhood Market Association locally, heralds passage of the resolution as, quote, a historic day that will go down in the annals of Iraqi Christian history. Arabo adds, the resolution is imperative towards the growth and sustainability of minorities throughout the world plagued with the threat of death, injury, and destruction of property. He voices hope that this resolution will lay the groundwork for a presidential executive order to be signed into law protecting Christians in Iraq. Arabo praised Congressman Vargas for his valiant efforts to push this resolution through and adds that the Iraqi Christians in America remain steadfast in commitment to the plight of ethnic and religious minorities throughout the world. Iraq is embroiled in a political and religious insurrection stemming from an ISIL-led offensive that started in the Anbar province and spread to Mosul, Tikrit, and other areas, engulfing the region in violence and instability. About 97% of Iraq's 31 million people are Muslim. About 3% are religious minorities, and that includes Christians, Jews, Yazidis, Bahias, and others. Over 500,000 people have been displaced by the current situation in Iraq, and now reports have surfaced of targeted persecution and killing of Iraqi religious minorities by ISIL, as we've been reporting the last couple of weeks. with no protection from the Iraqi government to speak of. Once ISIL established its control over northwestern Iraq and Syria, it declared a caliphate, warning Christians to convert to Islam or be executed. Iraqi Christians fled to neighboring Kurdistan, Syria, Lebanon, and Jordan. Now, the last 1,500 families to leave were robbed at an ISIS checkpoint, and reports indicate there are no more Christians left in Mosul, which was ancient Mesopotamia, one of the early Christian strongholds. The resolution calls on the U.S. State Department to work with the governments of Iraq and neighboring countries, Iraqis in the U.S., the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, and other stakeholders to secure safe havens for those seeking amnesty. It also asked for a special representative for religious minorities to be included in Iraq's newly reconstructed government. And lastly, the Vargas Resolution calls on the U.S. representative to the United Nations to work with the U.N. High Commissioner for Refugees on a sustained basis to document human rights abuses against Iraqi civilians and come up with an immediate plan for safe humanitarian access to clean drinking water, health care, fuel, electricity, and security. It also urges the government of Iraq to take immediate steps to protect safety and constitutional rights of all Iraqi citizens. Now, in a related development, the White House has just issued its first official condemnation of the persecution and massacre of Iraqi Christians by ISIS terrorists. Deputy National Security Advisor Benjamin Rhodes met with Iraqi Chaldean and Assyrian leaders on July 31st to discuss the security situation in Iraq and its effects on Christians and other minority populations. Just hours later, the White House press secretary issued a statement indicating that Rhodes appreciated hearing these perspectives and that the deputy national security advisor has condemned ISIL's attacks on Christians and minorities, as well as the destruction of religious sites. In addition, Rhodes says the U.S. is urging Iraq's leaders to form an inclusive government that can address the rights and legitimate concerns of all Iraq's diverse communities, including Christians and other minorities, in order to successfully confront the security and humanitarian challenges faced by citizens in the fight against ISIL. He asked that the Iraq government take all possible steps to assist Iraq's vulnerable people and said the issues demand the attention of the international community. Now, here in East County, Mark Arabo praised the Obama administration for speaking out to condemn ethnic cleansing in Iraq, and he said it affirms that the president will stand by religious minority groups throughout the world. Arabo called for measures to assure minority representation in foreign governments, adding, "We will continue to apply pressure on the Maliki government to introduce the proper legislation that reinforces its commitment to religious minorities." This is Miriam Raftery with an alert for residents in the Bratton Valley neighborhood in Dearhorn Valley near Hamul. The Dearhorn Valley Antler reports sightings of a mountain lion and four attacks on livestock in the past 3 weeks that may have been a lion. Resident Debbie Hopkins has had three goats killed and a fourth attack was foiled by her dogs. Her animals were attacked from behind and large cat tracks that appear to be mountain lions were found in her fenced yard. Mountain lions are typically most active at dusk and after dark. It's common for them to partially bury their prey and return later to feed on their cachet. A mountain lion's tracks look similar to a house cat's, but much larger, and unlike dogs or coyotes, mountain lion tracks have no toenail marks. The best way to discourage mountain lions from entering your property is to use outdoor lighting, including lights with motion sensors. Removing dense vegetation where lions can hide and stalk their prey is also helpful, and loud noises may frighten away a lion. Fences will not keep a mountain lion out since they can jump over a 15-foot-high fence. Keeping chickens and smaller livestock fully enclosed, as in a hen house with a roof, at night is helpful to protect your animals. And, of course, it's also wise to keep your pets inside at night if a mountain lion is in your area.
After hearing testimony from Campbell residents who object to the state's proposed placement of a sexually violent predator, Alan Fields, in their rural community, Judge Margie Woods postponed a decision. The judge plans to visit the site and talk with law enforcement about response times in the area before a new hearing set for August 22nd. Just one day before the hearing on Fields on July 23rd, another sexual predator, Jay Wilson Creature, raised alarm among East County residents. According to the sheriff, Creature broke into a 70-year-old woman's home in Hakumba and sexually assaulted her while he was wearing an ankle bracelet. That doesn't inspire confidence in electronic monitoring, which officials previously touted as a way to protect community members. Moreover, Campo has among the slowest response times by law enforcement of any place in the county, as an East County Magazine special investigation recently revealed. Campo residents regularly waited 25 to 30 minutes or more on average for sheriff deputies to respond to even the most serious felonies. Supervisor Diane Jacob also testified. She noted that 3 of 6 sexually violent predators released recently into the backcountry have been returned to state mental hospital for violating parole conditions. Jacob said, "This just demonstrates the system doesn't work." She called the system broken and insisted that such individuals pose a danger to the community. Fields, a diagnosed pedophile, was convicted of molesting 4 young boys after first establishing relationships as their caregiver or Boy Scout leader. He spent 25 years in prison, then underwent sexual offender treatment in a state hospital. In 2003, he submitted to surgical castration. Last December, Judge Woods granted Fields' petition for outpatient placement, finding that he could be safely released into the community. The State Department of Hospitals is proposing that Fields be placed in a Campo home located on 5 acres of private property. Alan Spillman of Liberty Healthcare, which monitors released predators for the state, testified that in the program's 11-year history, it hasn't had a client commit a new sexual offense, Channel 6 News reported. But families living just a few doors away aren't satisfied, particularly after a recently released sex offender in Hakumba did commit a new sexual offense. These Campo parents fear for the safety of their children. Christine Vergara voiced anger over the proposal and told the judge that placing a predator in Campo would be a detriment to the community. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Miriam Raftery with today's Green Scene Report. The Sequan Peak Ecological Preserve in East County has some new residents. 5 western pond turtles just released into the wild, the San Diego Zoo has announced. Once abundant along the west coast from Mexico to Canada, California's only freshwater turtles have become rare. Non-native species such as largemouth bass, catfish, and bullfrogs, along with human poachers, have preyed on these tiny turtles through the years. But now a joint program with the San Diego Zoo, California Department of Fish and Game, San Diego Association of Governments, and the U.S. Geological Survey has led to release of the 5 turtles, each about the size of an English muffin. The pond where the turtles are released has everything a wild turtle could hope for, according to the zoo blog. Logs and granite for basking in the sun, fresh cool water for swimming, cattails and willows for shade, and plenty of insects and invertebrates to eat. Now, even though turtles move slowly, they may not stay put, and so scientists want to make sure they know where the turtles go to keep them safe. Each turtle is equipped with a miniature transmitter, enabling researchers to track their whereabouts as they seek to reestablish this rare breed into ponds across our region.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation.
Welcome to Vines and Wines with your host, Greg Manis of the Manis Vineyards Estate.
Hello, San Diego. Welcome to Vines and Wines. It's a radio show that introduces you to many of the rising new superstars and energized people in the local wine industry that will forever change the landscape of San Diego as it emerges into a brand new wine-growing district.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show, and today it's my pleasure to introduce our listeners to the brand new host of Vines and Wines, Don Rutkoff. Greg Manis, our founding Vines and Wines host, has just gotten too busy out there planting vineyards all over East County, so he's asked Don to take over the duties of covering our local winemaking beat. It's a tough job, but somebody's got to do it. Don is a wine connoisseur who studied winemaking in Napa Valley, and currently he teaches viticulture at Cuyamaca College. We're delighted to welcome Don to our show.
Hello, listeners. This is Don Rutkoff, your intrepid reporter for East County Magazine's Vines and Wines. We're out on tour today in Ramona with members of the East County Vintners Association, and we're touring in Ramona to visit the Ramona wineries. And we'll have here at our first stop Michael Moore and Terry Kearns of Ramona Ranch Winery. And Michael is also the newly elected president of the Ramona Valley Vineyard Association.
Thank you, Don.
Thanks for coming out today.
And we have about 25 people on tour today. So, Michael, tell us a little bit about Ramona Ranch Winery.
Well, we got started in 2006 making wines and from local grapes, just doing an amateur. And then started winning awards with our wines, and in 2009 won a really big award with the Amateur Winemaker Competition for Winemaker Magazine.
And that's a nationwide or actually international competition.
Absolutely. And that really kind of kicked us into our commercial mode, started making wines commercially after that.
All right. How many vines or how many acres do you have planted here at Ramona Ranch?
We have 10 acres on property, and we've got about 2,000 vines in the ground right now with plans to double that hopefully over the next few years.
And what is the, at this point, what do you think is your best varietal that's growing and making the best wine?
We have Tannat planted. Tannat is a very tannic grape that is a lesser known southern French varietal, and it's making a really good single varietal right now.
And we're playing with Symphony, which is a hybrid that was created by UC Davis back in the 40s. But I think what Ramona is going to be known for are the southern Rhone varietals, Syrah, Tempranillo, and we're seeing amazing things with Sangiovese Grosso. Sangiovese happens to be my favorite.
And I've had some other Sangioveses. It does seem to grow really well here in San Diego County. Mm-hmm. And Sangiovese, for those of you who don't know, is what's grown in Chianti, Italy. So Chianti is our Sangiovese. So tell us a little bit about the difficulties and the joys of growing here in Ramona.
The heat that we get in Ramona during the mid part of the day kind of shuts the vines down. That'd be one of the things that makes it challenging to grow grapes. The growing region itself with the ocean influence overnight really cools the grapes down at night, so they hold their acid, and that'd be a benefit.
Yeah, one of the things I like to say is that grapes like what we like. They like to have a little cool breeze, some dappled sun, and nice fresh water. And we have all those things in Ramona, and I think it really lends itself to a quality grape coupled with our unique terroir. If you've been up to Ramona, you see the rocks, the limestone, the granite.
Yes, Ramona is one big hunk of granite. So this is a working ranch. How many head of cattle do you have here?
Well, we only have one cow or steer named T-Bone.
Which is what I had last night. Oh, no, not that T-Bone, the other T-Bone.
Don't tell T-Bone. No, he's a pet. We rescued him from a 4-H kid. We're very active in the horse community. We've got chickens, goats. So we have a lot of fun when we have families come up to the winery and actually take them down to the barn, see the chickens, the goats, the cow.
Collect eggs.
As the president of the Ramona Vineyard Association, can you tell us about how many wineries are there now that are licensed and bonded, and about how many vineyards or growers are there in Ramona?
Well, we have over 100 plus growers in Ramona, and we have about 26 bonded licensed wineries, and I believe all of those are open to the public right now.
And mostly, if people do want to come up and come tasting, we're open on the weekends. The majority of the wineries still have daytime jobs. You can log on to the RamonaValleyWineRegion.com, read past issues of the magazine, and download the latest current map, which shows you all of the tasting rooms in and around Ramona and the Highland Valley area, their contact information, and hours of operation.
Well, thank you very much for sharing a few minutes of your time with us today, and we'll be back soon.
Now, about 25 wine lovers turned out to attend that tour of Ramona's wineries. Each winery has its own ambiance, from the Western motif at Hellenbach to the subterranean wine cellar tasting room at Turtle Rock. Don Rutkoff said he was impressed with the quality of many of the wines on the tour, which you won't find in the retail stores or on restaurant wine lists, because these are small producers who sell all of their wines at their weekend tasting rooms. Many of them are winning medals, however, in wine tasting competitions both locally and nationally. East County Magazine looks forward to covering similar tours in the future in places like Campo, Dehesa, Potrero, Jamul, and other rugged outposts in the Rocky Heights and valleys east of San Diego, where new vineyards and wineries are sprouting up like wildflowers. You can read Don Rutkoff's Vines and Wines column now for more coverage of our local wine industry on our website at eastcountymagazine.org. And next up, we're going to play a Best of East County episode of our visit to a zebra ranch right here in East County. Now, straight from the headlines, we bring you the latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso. My guest today is Nancy Nunke, who is the executive director of the Hearts and Hands Animal Rescue. It's an education and therapy center, and they do some amazing things with some very special animals, including zebras. You heard it right. We have a zebra ranch right here in East County. Nancy, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Miriam.
Now, I have to ask, how did you develop an interest in zebras, of all things? How did this get started?
Well, it happened many decades ago. I was a horse trainer, and I showed horses. And I had a wildlife park call me and ask me if I could train a zebra they had a problem with. And apparently this two-year-old little stallion was chewing at people through the chain-link fence and didn't make it too inviting for the people who came to see him. So I said, of course, and my heart was going pitter-patter, pitter-patter, and I had no idea whatsoever what I was getting myself into. But this wild little zebra ended up coming to my barn, and within about 10 seconds, I realized it was not a horse with stripes.
It was a horse of a different color, in a sense. How did you realize that? What happened?
He wasn't trained at all, and I had to send him into my barn, into an open stall. And the second that I shut the bottom door of the Dutch doors of his stall, he started coming out over the top door.
Uh-oh.
And so that was some pretty fast action we had to do. And just all of his behaviors just showed us that this was not even a typical, but a wild horse would do.
Wow.
So I had a lot of homework to do. So what I did was spent the next 60 days at a different wildlife park. And I went every morning and stayed till nighttime, and I observed their zebra group. And
interesting.
So that's how I learned enough just to get him to the point where I could take him back and put 90 days later to his wildlife park, and he'd no longer chewed on the fence. But it began a lifetime of my love and devotion to the zebras.
Now, you now have various types of zebras at your ranch. How many varieties do you have?
We have all three species, including the Grevy's, which is the largest of the zebras, and they have a large mule-like head and very mm-hmm. large umbrella-type ears, and they have a very narrow striping pattern, and it's vertical on their body,
mm-hmm.
and they're endangered. And then the second one, which is vulnerable here and endangered in a lot of countries, it's going to be considered endangered very shortly.
So you're actually helping to preserve the endangered species.
Yes, we are. Yeah.
And you're USDA licensed and everything.
Absolutely.
Right?
Mm-hmm. USDA and Fish and Game and so on. So the second one is the Hartman's Mountain Zebra.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, we just had a baby born this year. He's just about 3 months old. Thank you. And it's been 4 years for us. So
mm-hmm.
It's just wonderful that we were able to have this little baby born and able to share it with the public, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're the second size. They're the kind of the middle size zebra.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other one is the Grant Zebra or the Plain Zebra. And they're what's considered the most common zebra. But every year, thousands and thousands are being depleted. So they're much less common.
Wow, that's really sad. But it's good that you're able to help work on saving the species, even if it's in captivity. Now, you've developed a reputation for some amazing training techniques that you do with these zebras. In fact, I understand you're known as the Zebra Whisperer.
I guess that's what they call me. Yes.
Yeah, you do something called friendship training.
Friendship training is something that the zebras taught me.
Tell us what that involves.
Friendship training is something that I developed over several decades with the zebras. Zebras cannot be force trained, and force training is something that is used with horses. Sometimes we decide ourselves, you know, what is force training and what isn't force training, and then we say, well, this is natural training, natural horsemanship, and there's a variety of people out there that are using natural horsemanship in how they define it. But really, it's the animal that decides whether it's force training or not. So horses are domesticated, and they are much more submissive to our ways of training them. They don't fight very much. Mm-hmm. And so it's very difficult to know if we're forcing them to do something or if we're asking them to politely to do it, because most of the times they'll just do it. But with zebras, when you use typical horse training on them, they will say absolutely not, mm-hmm. and they'll fight.
And that can even be dangerous. I know you've told me zebras don't make good pets because of their temperament.
That's very correct. Children should never be around zebras. And you know, occasionally we have a little baby or something, but mm-hmm. I mean a full-size zebra. Because of the way that they have to be trained, mm-hmm. and that's what friendship training is all about, which is we become the animal to train the animal. Mm-hmm. Hmm. And when you do that, a zebra will become your very best friend. And zebras, in the plain zebras, the Grants, each has one best friend in their group. And if someone else in the group tries to interfere with that friendship, like walking between them, coming to eat with the two friends, they will get shunned, they will get kicked, they will get bitten. And until human beings understand that the zebra social protocol is friendship-based, then people can't train zebras. Mm-hmm. And yet, here with friendship training at Hearts and Hands Animal Rescue, we train zebra after zebra after zebra after zebra, and have proven over many decades that friendship training, which is the way they train mm-hmm. each other, is the way to go.
Yeah, I've seen this in action at your ranch, and it's really amazing what you've accomplished with some of these animals. Now, zebras aren't the only animals at the ranch. Another unusual animal that you have there is the wild Mongolian horse, or Przewalski's horse, that was actually extinct, I understand, or down to just one stallion in the whole world left in the wild. Tell us about these.
Yes, these are just absolutely amazing horses. Until several years ago, I had never even seen one myself mm-hmm. In person. And then all of a sudden, we have 12 of them that we had to rescue.
Yeah, and we should add that what happened was when it was discovered there was only one left in the wild, a search was made to find some that were in captivity and to begin breeding them. And so how many are there left in the world today?
There are about 1,200 now in the world.
Wow.
Coming from just 9 breedable animals.
Amazing.
That were found in a zoo. So, you know, people can talk about zoos and say there shouldn't be any, but if there weren't, there would be so many species of endangered animals that would now be extinct.
Sure.
And we would never have the opportunity to see them again or to breed them and mm-hmm. then put them back in the wild, as we've now done with the pea horses.
That's wonderful.
There are 3 groups
yeah,
back in the wild now.
That's wonderful. And what have you found these horses to be like when you've worked with the Przewalski's horses? What are they like? What are some of the challenges you face there?
Well, just like the zebra, and in fact even more so, they will not be force trained. And that is why no one has ever been able to train them. Even Genghis Khan and his henchmen could never train these Przewalski's horses.
So the Mongol hordes could not bring this Mongolian wild horse to be tamed.
That's right. So when we had one little one come on her own to us, an orphan, I thought that would be a great opportunity since I couldn't introduce her as so young into one of the other groups. Mm-hmm. I said, well, let's try some friendship training with her and see. Maybe this could work.
And it did.
Well, she took to it just immediately. She's now 3 years old, and she's even inviting us to get on her back.
My goodness.
And this is something that no one has ever seen with these horses, and people have tried for yeah. centuries to train them. Even in our modern day societies where they're in zoos, they bring in the top horse trainers and have tried to train these horses mm-hmm. and no one's been successful. And here at Hearts and Hands Animal Rescue with friendship training, it just was so normal for her to be trained this way. And there was absolutely just no issues with it. And to me, she's just like another horse. But when Great. You approach her in a different manner, the way people approach horses, all of a sudden she becomes a pea horse again.
Now, another very special horse you have there is called the Caspian horse. And this one, it's a small breed of horse, but very strong, I understand. And it was thought to be gone from the face of this earth. And then how was it rediscovered?
Well, it's very interesting. They were thought to be gone for 1,300 years.
My goodness.
And this is the horse that when you are over in Persia, in the Persian countries, mm-hmm. you will see in the architecture, you'll see soldiers in their ancient warrior garb riding these teeny horses, and the feet of the men are right down to the ankles of the horses.
Wow.
And when I saw those, I thought those were just caricatures of, you know, mm-hmm. of the real thing. And in fact, that's exactly what
wow.
it is. These horses are 11 to 13 hands tall. And so good difference of, you know, 8 inches difference mm-hmm. in the lower to the higher height range. But what makes them so fascinating is that a full grown, you know, an adult about 150 mm-hmm. pounds can ride these horses. And there is yeah. a physical reason for that with the horse. And that is that their scapula, their shoulder bone is actually the same width as it is on a 15-hand quarter horse.
Wow, that's amazing. And the story behind this, I understand, is there was an American woman that was visiting over there in what used to be known as Persia, now Iran, and she saw a peddler with a horse pulling a cart, this small horse pulling this huge, heavy cart, and asked, where did it come from? And tell us what the answer was.
Yes, and he said he had gone up into the mountains when he needed a horse, and would get a horse out of the mountains. There
wow.
were wild horses up there.
Yeah, and in this war-torn region, where obviously there's threats to them from more than the usual problems.
Correct.
So this woman then managed to get a few out of the country and started a captive breeding program in addition to whatever's left in the wild there.
That's correct. She sent some to Australia, to England, and to the United States. I mm-hmm. think we got 24 here.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's about 900 in the world now, and we
wow.
have registration associations mm-hmm. for them. People just don't know this horse, and yet this horse trains up. So in 30 days, you can train a horse well enough for a child to ride it.
So this is not a wild thing like the Przewalskis or the zebras. This is something that actually is accustomed to domestication because, as you've noted, the soldiers used them for riding purposes
correct.
1,300 years or more ago.
Yes, this is one of the most ancient breeds of horse
wow.
in the world. And the oldest breed of horse in the world with a single toe is actually the Przewalski's horse.
My goodness, isn't that amazing? An interesting bit of trivia, by the way, about back to the zebras for a moment, is that they actually used to be found in San Diego County, I understand. There were giant zebras that roamed the Anza Borrego Desert at one time.
I don't know how giant they were, but there is a skull of a zebra that was found
yeah.
in the desert, and they have it in the museum down there.
There were once zebras roaming the Anza Borrego Desert. Another thing that you do, now you do a lot of not just rescue. Most of the animals you take in now actually are rescues that come from other places where maybe they were abused, an owner died. You've taken in everything from Zorses to zonkies that are mixes of zebras and horses, zebras
yes.
and donkeys, zebras where the owner can't care for them anymore. But you also use a lot of these animals for education and therapy, working with people who've maybe been in accidents, been injured themselves. Tell us about a couple of the animals that you've used for that are so inspiring to people.
Well, our program is very unique, our therapy program. We like to call it our wellness program. So we have people come in for various situations with PTSD. We have burn survivors.
Mm.
We have, again, people who have been in debilitating accidents. We have people who are suffering from grief, which can be very debilitating.
Yeah.
And grief can come in various fashions, whether it's from having a loved one die or losing a job, moving, changing schools. You know, there's so many reasons why people actually will grieve. But we use our animals that have very similar stories to what the person coming in would have. So, for example, we have a little horse named Chansey who came to us over 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And Chansey had been attacked by a pack of dogs, and his neck had been broken.
Mm.
His shoulders had been displaced by 6 inches.
Wow.
And his upper muzzle had been removed completely. Unfortunately, it had eaten by one of the dogs, so it was never able to be recovered and replaced.
But you've done amazing things, though, to
yes.
help the tissue regrow over the
the teeth and everything in the mouth.
So he's been in recovery with us for 3 years. His neck is completely better. His shoulders are back in place, and we're talking about 6 hours minimum every single day for over a year.
Yeah, you're a no-kill facility. It was very impressive when I visited to see you have animals that were, you know, the advice had been put them down, they'll never walk again. And you have many where you've been able to actually help them be able to walk again when they were thought to be paralyzed.
Yes, yeah. And it's just a matter of being determined. You know, we don't make those decisions for the animals. If they want to eat and they want to drink, that means they want to live. Mm-hmm. And so we just do whatever it takes. And we have so many wonderful therapists that come and help us and volunteer and share their time with mm-hmm. the animals so that they can recover. And it, just like people, there's no magic number of days, weeks, months, or even years in recovery. We have a zebra. His name is Zinti. He has his own Facebook page, Zinti the
Zinti
Zebra.
Zinti the Zebra.
Uh-huh. Z-I-N-T-Y. Z-I-N-T-Y. And Zinti is our comedian. He's a resident comedian. And he broke his pelvis 7 years ago. And he has one leg shorter than the other. He gets around the ranch. He's our mascot. He runs all over the ranch. Well, he does his special little hitch in his giddy up gate all over the ranch.
Wow.
But he wants to be here, and his sense of humor is the most amazing thing, you know. So wow. A lot of people think that because an animal has an injury that it just should be put down, you know. And that's just another way, they call it a polite way of saying kill. Yeah. But that's not something we do at the ranch. And so these animals, for the rest of their lives, give back to humans, and the sharing and the relationships are the most amazing things that you see develop between our wellness people and these animals.
Obviously, it's very expensive to care for this many animals. One of the things that you do to raise funds, although you're not breeding and selling these exotic species, but you do breed miniature spotted donkeys, beautiful animals, and Bengal cats, I understand.
Yes, those are my personal animals, and I breed them to help support the rescue. 100% of the money goes to the rescue.
Well, there you go.
And those are animals that you would rarely, if ever, see in a rescue. Mm-hmm. So the people that are looking for those animals are looking specifically one of those and not to a rescue for them.
So. Right. Now, you also have something very unusual. I understand that you just within the last couple of weeks got into the Guinness Book of World Records recently. Tell us about that.
Well, we're not quite there yet. We're just waiting for our approval.
Okay.
But we did do our Guinness Book of World Records attempt for the world record for the smallest bull, B-U-L-L.
And how small is he?
He's 28 3/16 inches tall.
Oh my goodness, I think I have a cat that's almost that big.
Yes, he's very, very tiny. And something really exciting is that we also, in the same group of little cows that came into us, that we also have a little girl whose name is Bluebell.
Wow. And we these are rescue animals, to be clear. Yeah.
Yes, they were actually very thin, and they were mangy. Someone purchased them who knew us. They were at a sale, and they brought them to us. And so, of course, they're very healthy now and
what kind of
chubby.
What species of bull is this?
It's called a miniature zebu.
Zebu.
Yeah, zebu. And these are one of the most ancient breeds of cattle, and they're naturally very tiny, and they're from India and Sri Lanka.
Fascinating. Do you only handle exotic animals, Nancy, or do you ever take in domestics?
We actually have about 1/3 is exotics, and then 2/3 is our local domestic animals, including dogs, cats, you know, chickens, goats, birds, and a lot of horses.
Wonderful.
So anybody who's looking to adopt a horse, a full-size horse, or even a miniature horse, please give us a call because we might have the animal for you.
Well, very good. That's wonderful to know. Now, you've withstood, like so many in East County, the tragedy of the 2007 wildfire. I understand that it destroyed the entire ranch.
Yes, we were very fortunate that we had an early warning of the fire. We could see it right from the ranch when it first started. And we also saw that the wind was, we did the old finger test, and it was coming our way. So
this was in Ramona, the Witch Creek fire,
which came
through there so fast.
Yes.
It was really almost no warning.
So we had about, we had 6 horse trailers in 6 hours, and all we could do was just keep taking the animals off the ranch.
And you managed to save all of them?
And we managed to save all of the larger animals.
Wonderful.
And just a few of the birds that were set free. There was no time to, you know, be able to catch them. Ended up going back into their pens. So it was a very, very sad time for us, as well as a time of elation that we were able to get almost everything off of
the
ranch.
But all the large and all these endangered animals.
Yes, we got everything off. So it was wonderful. But it devastated the entire ranch.
And you lost your home.
We lost the residence. We lost everything there. All of the equipment, all the feed carts, the truck, one of the vehicles.
What kind of insurance? Did you have adequate insurance for that?
Unfortunately, we were underinsured intentionally by our insurance company.
Many
people were at that time. And so a little bit of insurance that we did get, instead of building the residence with it, we had to bring all the animals back because they were in temporary places.
Yeah, so you chose to take care of the animals at your own expense instead of rebuilding your own home up there.
Yes, that's what happened.
Are you still hoping to rebuild someday?
The house has, it's got framing around it, and it's been sitting there, and we're hoping to get it finished.
Yeah. Wow. Do you need volunteers at the ranch? Can people come and help in that way?
We do need volunteers. We're always grateful when people would like to spend a day a week or more volunteering their time to help out. There's so much to do still after the fire. There's still so much to do in getting the ranch back to the way it was prior to that. And we really need volunteers to help us with fundraising events.
So you just had a music festival, I understand. And what else is coming up?
Yeah, we had a music festival. We also did the Amazing Pet Expo. And we have the Night of the Horse coming up on April 19th, where we have been asked to partake in the greatest horse show on earth.
Where and when will that be?
And that'll be at Del Mar. There'll be a lot of great acts that come in, and this is our first year to participate, and we're actually
going to
be doing the rare and endangered animals. So we will have the availability of people to come in and see Azores, Azonki, a couple of zebras, and Kaya the Przewalski's horse.
Now, you're nonprofit, so I assume that you accept donations, is that correct, if people are able to do that or wish to?
Yes, we're 501c3 nonprofit, so that works for everybody's taxes, and so we definitely will accept all the donations that come in and put it to good use to feed and house and care for all the animals.
Beautiful. And again, I'm talking with Nancy Nunke with the Hearts and Hands Animal Rescue in Ramona. What is your website for people who wish to get more information or find out how they can help and get involved?
Our website is hhar.org.
hhar.org. Well, very good. And are there opportunities if people want to visit the ranch? Do you ever have times where it's open to the public or where you do tours or anything like that, Nancy?
Yes, people can call us, actually, and then we set up for tours. We do have three different ways that we tour, the hour-and-a-half tour, which is the shorter one, and then the two-hour tour, and then we actually have a three-hour tour, and in that one, we actually show people how we work with friendship training with the animals.
It's very wonderful. I've been on one of these tours, I know, and it was quite, a media tour, but it was quite amazing and just really a very uplifting and fascinating place to visit. So, Nancy, I want to thank you very much for joining us here today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ. This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Brian Boykel, Kevin McLeod, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.